remedies in his early stages of cancer. Had he gone down the medical route earlier, he may have had a different outcome. And I hear people on the radio, very often there's discussions about this on LBC, and I'm amazed at people who say the most incredible things, you know. That,
Well, Michael, look, I agree with you. Whenever I've done phone-ins on this, I'm fairly trenchant in my views, shall we say. Thank you for your call. Mark is in Wembley. Hello, Mark.
Hello, good evening, and good evening, Mr. Hunt. I've been a GP in North London for 37 years, and today you've closed two of my local casualty departments. And now we're hearing that Charing Cross is to be replaced by an urgent care centre. So, Mr. Hunt, have you and the Prime Minister betrayed people by dishonestly claiming last year that Charing Cross would keep its A&E? And when will you stop using the NHS as a political football?
Well, we are not using it as a political football, Mark, and let me be absolutely clear. Charing Cross is keeping its A&E, and the decision I took, the advice I took, was what the local NHS in North West London, led by doctors, said they thought was right. And one of the reasons that they did it, if you're a GP, you'll probably be aware of this, is because they said they wanted to invest more money in out-of-hospital services and actually improving GP provision and helping GP surgeries to stay open at the weekends. And they were very clear that this was going to be the way that they could improve the services for the people in North West London. And I looked at those plans, and I have to say that I think that when they are implemented, North West London will have some of the best out-of-hospital care, not just in London, but across the whole country.
But we have to let those plans be
implemented, and then you can be the judge of that.
I've actually worked in urgent care centres. I've been a frontline GP working with London Ambulance for 4 years. And in my opinion, this idea to replace A&E departments with urgent care centres is utter madness. And the main reason is that these centres are staffed by GPs. Now, these are general practitioners. We are trained in general practice. We are not specialists. We are expected to deal with anything that comes in the door. Now, most people will not be able to diagnose their condition. They need a doctor to diagnose it. Now, somebody who's very ill walks into an urgent care centre and is not diagnosed, then the doctor's out of their depth. They can't deal with it. They have to then transfer that person into a casualty. So then you add the ambulance costs. But if I could take this a little bit further, I stopped working in urgent care because I did not feel safe. Now, I've been a GP for a long time, and I have expertise in one particular area, but I was not prepared to take on orthopedic work, which is what the urgent care doctors are having to do. And your earlier caller referred to negligence and complaints. And sadly, I think that because GPs are being put under so much pressure with increased workload, with patients who should be dealt with by specialists being transferred into the community that you were talking about, without additional resources. And in primary care, we've had our resources, our nurses, we've had everything cut gradually over the last 20, 30 years. And we're at a point now where we cannot cope with the extra specialist work that you're pushing out in the community.
Okay, Jeremy?
Well, look, I do agree with the last bit of what you said. I think that we need much more capacity in primary care. We're going to have 1 million more people over 70 by 2020. And we need to give GPs more time to give them the kind of proactive care that they need. And GPs are working their socks off. They're working very, very hard. We've got plans to train another 5,000 GPs. It doesn't happen overnight, as you will know, having been through that training yourself. But we do need that capacity.
Right. Let's go to Jan in Hammersmith. Jan, hello.
Hello. Greetings, Mr. Hunt and Ian. Mr. Cameron said on the 15th of May via Get West London, Alex Cutterson, the reporter, Charing Cross will retain its A&E services, so I think the Conservative councillors are correct to write to local residents to put the facts right. Now, I've listened to previous callers, so I can't really say that it's dangerous. You're not telling the truth, Mr. Hunt. You are actually fooling the public. We're not fools. I am dependent on those A&Es. Today, two went down. Two were killed off. 2 million people are left with two less A&Es in a very busy area. Now, what gave you the mandate to destroy vital services And also, Charing Cross is being demolished. It is going to be rebuilt with a 24 inpatient bed, confirmed by your local ex-Tory councillors, as they told everybody, by the trust of which Tracy Batton herself and the other trust members voted to have these hospitals demolished and rebuilt for 24 inpatient beds.
Let's get an answer from Jeremy.
Okay. First of all, I took the decision not to close Charing Cross A&E. There was an option on the table, but I said, no, I want to keep it. I used to live in Hammersmith myself, and I said no. The decision I took was that we do need to improve the way we deliver out-of-hospital care, so I accepted the recommendations from the GPs who run the North West
London. But it is true that the number of beds there is going down from, is it 700 to 24? That's what I think I was told earlier in the programme.
What many doctors say is that if we're going to treat older people in the way that we want, then we need to have better care in people's homes, in the community. We need to have more district nurses, better access to GPs. And actually, that's a far better way of looking after an 85-year-old person with dementia than carting her into an A&E department in the middle of the night. And I think if doctors are saying that's the way that we should be looking after these people, I think that one of the things about the NHS, we all buy into the fundamental principles of the NHS, a free service not dependent on your bank balance, there for everyone. But with an ageing population, we also have to be open-minded. The way we deliver services will change, because for older people, travel is much harder, and it's not always the best thing to cart people into
talking hospital. Of the travel, that's what we have to do now. Jan, thank you very much indeed. More from Jeremy Hunt in just a minute. You can watch us live. LB.